Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily and these days more than daily politics podcast. Are we on the eve of a Brexit deal? I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and the Irish Times London editor Dennis Staunton to find out. So James, there's been lots of noise over the past 24 hours, lots of visits to number 10 from various parties who would need to vote for any Brexit deal, the DUP, the ERG, potentially some of those former Tory Brexit rebels. But is there a sign that we are actually coming to an agreement which will be thrashed out at the EU Council summit?
So this has been a kind of properly rollercoaster day. I think at kind of 6 a.m. this morning, optimism was at kind of rock bottom. Everyone thought two sides were apart. Then Boris Johnson and Leo Varadkar had a good phone call. And we don't know the details, but we know there was some discussion on consent, which indicated a certain softening in the EU position, or maybe we should say more accurately, the Irish position on the consent issue. I think the EU are quite happy. And then Boris Johnson met with the DUP. And that hasn't resulted in the DUP being happy, but it hasn't resulted in them saying no either. And so we are still waiting to see whether we can get a resolution. I think it is fair to say that inside number 10, after the Boris Johnson Varadkar call, there was a sense that they were right on the cusp of it. After the DUP meeting, that fell back a bit. And now, I think the phrase Boris Johnson used for 22 is that they were at the Hillary step, going strong for the summit, but the top was shrouded in clouds. So I think they feel one more gust could do it, of wind can make it clear what the deal is. But there's no deal essentially about Arlene Foster and Nigel Dodds' support, because when you look at the parliamentary arithmetic, it is very difficult to see how any deal could pass without the DUP support. And politically, as you said in your article this morning, the worst outcome for Boris Johnson is trying to bring a deal back and having it defeated by the DUP and the ERG, and then tumbling into an election, having lost some of his Brexit cred and not having a deal.
Dennis, we sit next to each other in the lobby, and over the past years, you're often optimistic when I'm not about what's actually happening. How optimistic are you, speaking to, you know, figures in the Irish government, those sources, that there is a sense that they're getting to something?
I think there is a sense they're getting to something, and that we're very, very close. And I think Boris Johnson is right that we're very close to the summit, but it's just a little bit out of sight. What happened last night, I think, was that there was a very difficult few hours in the talks, because although they were making a lot of progress on, say, customs, and I think I understand that the DUP were really quite happy by the end with the arrangement on customs, that then at the last minute there was the issue of VAT was thrown into the mix, apparently by the British side, but I think the Europeans think they can sort that one out. But then the issue of consent was the problem. And then this morning, Leo Varadkar appears to have made a big offer, as far as the Irish see it, at least on consent. And everybody thought that might be enough for the DUP, but it just wasn't. And so the DUP are quite determined. They were very annoyed when EU sources briefed out that they had already agreed to something on the consent issue. And I think we find ourselves now, as they're heading into another round of talks in Downing Street, that we're still locked in this. And what it all really hinges on is, how does Northern Ireland express its consent for these arrangements? And the initial idea was that they should have to express their consent in advance, and that this would be done in the Northern Ireland Assembly. And in the Northern Ireland Assembly, you've got a system really of double majorities. For anything important, you need the support of the whole Assembly, a majority of the Assembly, and also a majority in each community. And then that they were going to have to renew that every 4 years. It sounds like the initial idea, the pre-authorization, is gone, but that the question is, how do you renew this? And the DUP want to keep a veto, and the Irish effectively say you can't give one side or the other a veto, and they're trying to come up with some way that it can satisfy the DUP's demand that they should be able to say to their people, we can stop this if we want to.
Now, just on that, you mentioned concessions that the Irish have made. We've heard a lot about what concessions Boris Johnson is making. Do you get the sense that there is an equal level of movement in terms of what each side is giving to get to a deal, or do you think Britain's giving more?
I think there were two. I think the first big concession was made by the UK side when it conceded that there should be a regulatory border in the Irish Sea, and so that that there should be regulatory alignment between North and South in Ireland, and that meant there was not going to be a regulatory border. And then the second big concession that Boris Johnson made was he acknowledged that there should be no customs checks on the island of Ireland. On the EU side, they agreed that you could actually find a system which meant that Northern Ireland could leave the EU customs union with the rest of the United Kingdom. And that was obviously very important from the point of view of sovereignty for the unionists, and also from Boris Johnson's point of view, because it was a red line of his. So where consent is concerned, I think we're operating a little bit in the dark because we don't know exactly what the concession was that Leo Varadkar made. But it does seem like both sides thought it was a big one. And I think both in Downing Street and in Dublin, they thought it probably would be enough to move the DUP. But it turns out it wasn't. And what we don't know again is whether what they need is a little bit more, which might be possible tonight, or do they need a lot more, which might not be possible.
And James, let's talk about timing. I know it's very hard to say when we might hear something, but in terms of the, I suppose, what we're seeing going forward, it's the EU Council Summit. Tomorrow night there is a meeting. It runs until Friday. And we understand that the government is planning to try and hold a sitting of Parliament on Saturday. To do that, they have to win a vote in the Commons, which isn't really Boris Johnson's strong point. But when will we know if Boris Johnson is going to have a deal to present in theory in that session?
I think we will probably know by Friday morning at the latest. I mean, Downing Street's view is if they deliver even a political statement very late in the day, that will set off the conspiracy theories of Tory Brexiteers that they have somehow been sold down the river. I think the thing that is making Downing Street feel happy at the moment is that on the level playing field front for the whole of the UK, the thing that probably the ERG have essentially outsourced their judgment on Northern Ireland to the DUP. It's the political declaration and what it implies about the future UK EU economic relationship and political relationship that they care about most. On that, number 10, I think I'm pleasantly surprised, but and we'll have to wait and see the political declaration, but some fairly vague words about a fair competition have been sufficient for the EU. So I think they feel fairly confident on where they're going to end up with on that front. And so I think everything really does come back to Northern Ireland. And I think the thing worth remembering here is that the DUP do not have a huge number of options right now. And they're in a very odd position because a deal can't pass without them. And I don't think Boris Johnson would try and bring back a deal without their support. Then that goes to a general election. If Boris Johnson wins a majority in that general election, he would go to Brussels and, having talked very tough about the EU would have 72 hours to accept my proposals, he would then, I think, accept the proposals that are currently on the table. And if he had a majority, the DUP would, at that point, be much less important. And I think one thing that friends of Boris Johnson have been saying to very senior figures in the DUP is, if you help us get out of this hole, even if we win, you know, a 50-seat majority, we will never forget you. Our door will always be open to you. But, look, you know, if we can't get a Brexit deal, who knows what might happen in that general election? And by the way, the DUP don't need reminding not only what Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell's views are on Northern Ireland, but also what what you might call the broad Remain Alliance's views are on Northern Ireland and the DUP. You know, the DUP have been on the wrong end of various Commons votes on issues that matter to them, on abortion and gay marriage and stuff, from precisely the kind of government that might emerge from a hung parliament. And so I think there's a kind of question here about whether the DUP want to... The DUP are very powerful now. They might not be so powerful after an election, and whether that influences their thinking or not.
I think the other problem the DUP have is that they were surprised by the level of pushback they got from their own community when they agreed to a regulatory border in the Irish Sea. And having to go a bit further on customs and sort of thicken that border, that then means that they really need a very robust consent mechanism to be able to say that they're going to remain in control of this. And I think they're under pressure from their grassroots, and they are people who do tend to be pretty fearless negotiators, and they have nerves of steel, you know, when they go into these things. So I do think that if they don't get what they think they need, they will walk away. And they will announce, I'd say, pretty quickly and straightforwardly that that's what they're doing. But I think James is right. They have few options. They would like to get a deal. They feel as if they don't want to be left isolated, and they definitely don't want to get the blame for a no-deal Brexit.
James, one other group that Boris Johnson will need to pass a Brexit deal are those rebels, those Conservative MPs who had the whip withdrawn after they voted for the Benn legislation, or he'll need at least the bulk of that group. Now, most of them said the reason they were going for the Benn legislation, known as the Surrender Act within Number 10, was the sense that it would help to get a deal. Yet we're hearing today, some of it not on the record, you know, off the record comments, that actually some of these MPs are criticising the fact that they think this will be a much looser arrangement, it could damage the economy, and they're also saying that they want time to look over it. So is there a risk that if there was a Saturday vote, this group actually would say, we haven't had enough time and we're uncomfortable with the almost the free trade nature of what you're proposing?
Yeah, I think it is no secret that Philip Hammond and Boris Johnson, when they were both in cabinet on all these cabinet committees, clashed on precisely the question that is at the heart of this Brexit deal. The changes that Boris Johnson have made are the changes that he was arguing for in the UK negotiating position that Philip Hammond was arguing incredibly strongly against. And so I think that Philip Hammond will not be keen to vote, not just on both a policy and a personal level, would not be keen to vote for a Boris Johnson deal at this point. I think the difficult thing for them, though, is that they have built up no deal as the bogeyman. And I think it is then quite hard to turn around and say, oh, I only did all this to avert no deal, and now I'm going to vote against the deal. And I also think it's a massive strategic risk. If this deal goes down, you are rapidly pushing this to a no deal, no Brexit scenario. And I don't think anyone who worries about no deal should be confident that it wouldn't happen in that scenario, that it wouldn't win out if the choice is between those two unpalatable options of no deal or no Brexit at all.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Dennis. And do join us again tomorrow, where we may or may not have a deal to talk about.